This is Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. All day long, you've been hearing that President Donald Trump is nearing a final decision to pull the United States out of the Paris Climate Agreement. Now, he hasn't made it official yet, and the Washington Post is reporting that the decision is dividing the administration. The Post says Ivanka Trump and Secretary of State Rex Tillerson are actually urging the president to remain in the Paris Accords. White House strategist Stephen Bannon and EPA Administrator Scott Pruitt are pushing for the U.S. to pull out. But regardless of what President Trump decides, it will be an act of American leadership, rather different than the one President Obama celebrated 2 years ago when the Paris Climate Accord was first negotiated.
Together, we've shown what's possible when the world stands as one. Today, the American people can be proud because this historic agreement is a tribute to American leadership.
That was President Obama 2 years ago. But here's the thing. If the U.S. pulled out of the Paris Agreement, would it be the worst thing in the world? Now, trust me, I am not trolling you here. And let me just say that absolutely, the scientific evidence overwhelmingly proves that climate change is real. I'm asking a question more about the specifics of the Paris Agreement itself and what's lost and perhaps what's gained if the United States does indeed pull out of the Accords. So joining me now from Portland, Maine, is Brian Deese. He was a senior advisor to President Obama and was the president's point person for the Paris negotiations. He's now a senior fellow at Harvard's Kennedy School of Government. Brian Deese, welcome to Radio Boston.
Happy to be here.
Well, so first of all, just give us your reactions. Like, what do you think would be the impact or the outcome if President Trump does indeed decide to pull out of the Paris Agreement?
Well, the one thing we know for certain is that the Paris Agreement will continue to go forward. The world is moving forward on this issue, and the momentum in the economy and diplomatically behind greater climate action is irreversible. So the one thing that Donald Trump can't do is stop that momentum. But if he does decide to announce the intention to withdraw the United States, what it could do is hurt the United States economically, because clean energy is one of the fastest growing sectors of our economy right now. There's more than 3 million people that work in clean energy and energy efficiency across the country. And diplomatically, because every one of our major allies around the world has made the case that the United States should stay in. And if we disregard that advice, then next time we're looking for a partnership, it's going to be a whole lot more difficult to get them to work with us.
Mm. Now, I mean, I should note that all the analysis that you just provided is largely the consensus view of the majority of climate scientists and climate policymakers, folks in the clean energy industry, economists, etc. But I still want to ask this question about the specifics of the Paris Agreement itself and really sort of what would happen if the U.S. did pull out. Because, you know, for example, I mean, just for some context, let me offer that the United States under President Obama agreed as part of the Paris Accords to reduce greenhouse gas emissions from this country by 26% to 28% below 2005 levels, and to do so by the year 2025, not far off. But because President Trump has already pulled out or ended the Obama administration's clean power plan, I mean, even if the United States stayed in the Paris Accord, it's highly unlikely that we would be able to reach that target anyway, isn't it?
Yeah, look, I think it's a totally legitimate question to say, given that Donald Trump's posture to climate change and environmental issues domestically is to turn the clock backward. Why does it really matter whether we stay at the table internationally? And I think that given the administration's posture on climate issues and their willingness to deny basic science, that is a reasonable question. But I think at the end of the day, part of the answer goes to the structure of the Paris Agreement itself. This agreement was not negotiated to be a top-down global supranational government that assigned carbon emission reductions targets to every country. In some ways, it was a much more modest undertaking. Mm-hmm. It said every nation is going to set for themselves what they can do to address this issue. And then every nation is going to buy into a process where they'll work together. They'll show each other their math. They'll be transparent about what they're actually doing. as part of an acknowledgement that the only way to solve this problem ultimately is through collective global action.
So let me just jump in here for a second, because it's that very process that I'm seeing that there's some, you know, pushback to this notion that it would be catastrophic if the U.S. pulled out of Paris. Because, yes, there is a concern that if, you know, a global leader pulled out of this climate accord, that there could be a domino effect, right, of other nations saying, we don't want to sign, we don't want to fulfill our obligations either. But I noticed, and this was via the Washington Post, but there was an article in the journal Nature Climate Change that said it's specifically because of this pledge and review process that you're talking about. The article says that a great power that willfully misses its target, as the United States probably would, could provide political cover for other laggards and weaken the soft power of process that's fundamental to the Paris Accords.
Well, look, first and foremost, the loser, if the United States pulls back from Paris, is the United States. Globally, the Paris Agreement will go forward, and globally, other countries will continue to operate under its framework. But I start from the perspective of what's in the best interest of the U.S. economy, U.S. communities, U.S. businesses. And on that score, being at that table and being part of that process to write the rules going forward is absolutely in America's economic interest, and it's in America's national security interest. Now, globally, could you argue that the rest of the world would be better off just thumbing their nose at the United States and going forward and setting these targets without the U.S. at the table? I understand the impulse to make that argument, but ultimately, what the Paris Agreement stood for, I think, will be an enduring reality on our planet, which is that to solve this problem, we're going to need global action. Mm-hmm. And so at the end of the day, the United States is going to need to be part of that process. I would rather see our country at the table, even if we aren't showing leadership, because at least that acknowledges that we understand the importance of working collectively between countries.
I mean, so isn't that exactly one of the main issues here? That, yes, I mean, the climate change is real. The future does not bode well for economically or environmentally if nothing is done around the world. That's one of the issues. But the other issue is just where we are vis-a-vis American influence, American soft power, American leadership around the world. Because I'm already hearing people saying it doesn't matter what President Trump does because the 190 plus nations that are sticking with Paris are looking to Europe, to China, to India to be the leaders on this.
Well, I think that that's a real missed opportunity for the United States. I mean, I think pulling out of the Paris Agreement and walking away from this table would be doing a huge favor to China. Let's be very clear about what Chinese ambition is right now. The Chinese want to project themselves as the emergent global power, and they want to project the United States as a country in decline. They've made that very clear, and they are a strategic adversary on a number of issues. Handing them this decision would be putting on a platter that argument. They would move forward and say, we are the global leaders on climate change. Follow us and work with us. And they would take that opportunity to set the rules of the game going forward in ways that benefit their economy first and foremost. Remember, a lot of the issues that need to get sorted out with respect to the Paris Agreement going forward are on things like intellectual property and transparency, things where our businesses and our economy has a lot at stake. China will write those rules going forward, working with the European Union and others, and they will relish the opportunity to present themselves as a global leader. I think the real question is, why would we as America want to put ourselves in the position of shying away from that challenge?
Right.
We have a private sector that is unanimous right now in speaking with the voice of saying, let's stay at the table and let's protect our interests. So there's no good economic argument to walk away from that table. And frankly, you know, our presence at that table, it might make negotiations tough. It might make things not move as quickly as they would otherwise. But ultimately, that would be a more enduring solution and a better solution for our economy.
You know, it seems like from India, for example, we're getting some mixed signals, though. They are making a significant commitment to renewable or clean energy sources. But on the other hand, that nation, India's sales tax on coal was just lowered to 5% from 11%. And there's a new 18% tax on solar cells there. So, I mean, what are we to make of that from a large and growing emitter?
Well, I'll tell you, I was in India with the president in January of 2015 when President Obama was Prime Minister Modi's guest for the Republic Day celebration. And that was when Prime Minister Modi made the commitment that India would deploy 100 gigawatts of solar capacity by 2022. And when he said that, virtually everybody in India and around the world said that was a fantasy, that there was no way that India could ramp up its renewable energy production that quickly. We're now only a little more than 2 years out from that date, and India is on its pathway to have installed 15 gigawatts of solar, and the industry is moving so quickly now that all of the questions are about, can India sustain this level of rapid increase of solar? And so, you know, are there going to be challenges in that kind of economic change in a country as dynamic and complicated as India? Absolutely. Mm. But I think the trajectory in India is clear, and the trajectory outside of India and in the rest of the world is clear. Economies are moving towards lower carbon solutions, and they're doing it because of the economics. Mm. Right now, if you look at an auction to bid for different types of electricity in the Indian market. In virtually every Indian state, solar beats new coal capacity. And when the economics mean that solar is cheaper and solar is easier to deploy, the capital is going to go to solar and not to coal.
Yeah. You know, I want to get back to this issue briefly of the United States and climate leadership here. Because, again, I'm seeing some kind of interesting pushback to this notion that it would be disastrous for the U.S. to pull out of the Paris Accord. Again, quoted in the Washington Post, Gabrielle Marty, a climate energy expert and former negotiator for France. So perhaps you encountered Mr. Marty during the Paris negotiations. He was recently quoted in saying that if the United States remained in the Paris Agreement, it would be, you know, a half-hearted participant, but that would still have an outsized voice in future changes that could be made to the Paris Accords, and that staying in that sense, could actually be a way for the United States to misbehave on the international level regarding climate, and that could be worse than a clean pullout. And then also, what about this issue? Sorry, I'm hitting you with a couple different questions here, but it's really interesting to me. Most Americans want climate action. But on the other hand, if the United States with the Trump administration stays in Paris, but we're not actually doing our part to reach those reduction targets, I mean, isn't that just allowing U.S. citizens to feel good about doing something when we're actually doing very little?
Sure. Two great issues, so I'll take them in turn. First, look, I think it may well be that there are some negotiators in other countries who would view it as in their strategic interest to not have to deal directly with the United States. And certainly when I was at the negotiating table and we were dealing with frustrating issues, there were some times where I wished to myself that maybe a certain country wouldn't be at the table either. But I think that what we know about this issue is that ultimately the solution is going to come from coordinated global action. And so having everybody at the table and everybody willing to commit to that process, even if the targets change over time, is better than the alternative. You know, I think the Paris Agreement is sort of analogous to the famous Churchill phrase about democracy, which is, you know, it's the worst form of a climate agreement that we've ever had, except for all the other ones that have come before it. It is imperfect in many ways, but the structure of global coordinated action is ultimately what's going to solve this problem. Look, on your second issue of what's going to motivate people toward action, you're absolutely right. People want climate action. More than half of voters in every district, red, blue, I know that Massachusetts is more a blue state than a red, but you've got a Republican governor who has advocated for staying in the Paris Agreement. Every district across the country, more than 50% of people support putting limits on the amount of carbon pollution that power plants can emit into the air. So the question is, you know, are we giving the current administration a free pass? And I think the truth is, you know, if they decide to stay at the table in Paris, I don't think anybody's going to go out and applaud them as climate leaders. Mm-hmm. I think that people will still continue to ask questions about why it is that they are advocating for weakening protections for cleaner air and cleaner water for our kids. I think the question really is, at the end of the day, we know what their domestic climate plan is as of right now. And the question is, given that, would we be better off at the table or stepping away from the Paris Agreement? And I think at the end of the day, it's in the United States' interest, in our economic and national security interest, to stay.
So, Brian Deese, you were former senior advisor to President Obama. You know, an American leader who had a very quite an internationalist view. President Trump has a very different perspective here, and I just wanted to quote you something that was in the Wall Street Journal just yesterday, an op-ed by National Security Advisor, co-authored by him, H.R. McMaster. Because this is the framework that's in the White House right now. McMaster wrote that the president has a clear-eyed outlook that the world is not a global community, but an arena where nations, non-governmental actors, and businesses engage and compete for advantage. We bring to this forum unmatched military, political, economic, cultural, and moral strength. And then McMaster writes, rather than deny this elemental nature of international affairs, we embrace it. So if that's the framework that President Trump is operating with right now, if you were to be one of his advisors, could you leverage that framework? Could you use that reasoning and still find a way to convince the president to stay at the table regarding the Paris Climate Agreement?
Absolutely. Look, acting on climate isn't about kumbaya or feeling good. There is a global competition, a race going on right now to figure out what countries are going to be the clean energy superpowers of the 21st century. And the countries that win that race are going to benefit economically, and they're going to benefit from a national security perspective as well. And it's competitive. Countries are actively working to try to attract the investment and the jobs that will flow from advances in clean energy. Our country should be at the head of that race. We have every element that we need to win and compete in that race. And we should be pushing for a level playing field, for transparency, so we know what's going on in countries like China and India. And they can't make promises and then evade them by having faulty data or not allowing people to look into their books. We should be willing to step up to that table and compete. And if there is a level playing field, I'm absolutely confident that American workers, American businesses can compete and win in that race. And the spoils from that would be extraordinary.
Well, Brian Deese is former senior advisor to President Obama. He helped negotiate America's agreement in the Paris Climate Accords a couple of years ago. He is currently senior fellow at Harvard's Kennedy School of Government. Brian Deese, it's been a true pleasure to speak with you. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
We'll be back. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is Radio Boston.